plenty of Cincinnati Bengals fans will be rooting against the Kansas City Chiefs in this weekend's Super Bowl game. But who are you rooting for when it comes to the team's stadium negotiations with Hamilton County? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about where those stadium talks stand and what a new proposal from Ohio Governor Mike DeWine could mean for funding Paycor Stadium upgrades are co-author of the book, Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit, Neil DeMoss. Thanks for being here, Neil.
Glad to be here.
Ohio Public Media Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler. Welcome back, Karen.
Hey, great to be here.
And Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterich. Thanks for being here, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
Chris, set the stage for us. Hamilton County and the Bengals have been working to negotiate a new lease for Paycor Stadium for quite a while. The county owns the stadium. How long has the current lease been in effect and when does it end?
Well, it's been in effect since 1997 and it expires in 2026. The thing to remember, though, is that the Bengals have the option to extend it in two-year increments five times. So they have to do that. If they want to do that starting next year, they need to notify the county by June the 30th of this year, which is an important date I think we'll get to later.
Yes. So, Neil, the Wall Street Journal once called this lease, the one that we're living in now, quote, one of the worst professional sports deals ever struck, end quote. You've done a lot of research on these lease deals. Where would you rank this original deal between Hamilton County and the Bengals?
Yeah, I don't know if we need to qualify it with one of the worst. It's pretty bad. You know, this is the poster child for terrible state-of-the-art clauses, right, where Hamilton County actually agreed to pay for anything that the Bengals owners wanted that other sports stadiums had, including a specific list of items, including a holographic replay system, if ever invented, the county has to buy for the team. So it's pretty bad, and certainly you don't want the to have to face the Bengals just extending it for another 10 years and have to live with it. Then the question is, what do you give up in exchange, right? What would you get back in terms of a better lease and in terms of less public cost?
That whole state-of-the-art clause, Neil, is that what makes this deal stand apart from the others that came before it?
It's part of it. I also, the county was the one who basically put up the money to pay for this, the stadium when it was new. But the state-of-the-art piece is something that really sort of became more common in the late 90s as teams were trying to figure out, okay, how can we get these things to be gifts that keep on giving, right? We don't want to just get the stadium. We want to make sure that upgrades are paid for by the public and not by us, the owners. So state-of-the-art clauses were a way to say, okay, if other cities do this, then you have to do it for us and or else we get to leave. And it's, you know, it's the exact same kind of clause that the St. Louis Rams used to leave St. Louis and move to Los Angeles on the grounds of, you know, you're not keeping this stadium in the same condition as all the other new stadiums. And it's really, you know, really a catch 22 at that point, because the city either has to keep putting more and more money into a stadium or risk the team breaking the lease.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lucy. The Bengals themselves will argue, vociferously that they have a fair deal that was in line with what was kind of common in the late 90s. I've recently gotten emails from one of their lawyers saying, look at Indianapolis's deal. This is very much on par with what other folks have gotten, which, you know, I'm not going to take sides at this point on that question. I haven't studied it in much detail, but I am curious, Neil, what you would say to that. Is that true in your mind, or is there other deals that are in league with this?
There are others that are pretty bad. Indianapolis has done a particularly horrible job of negotiating with sports teams over the years. But that's kind of the all the other kids are doing it argument, saying other cities are making terrible deals. You might as well, too. And I don't think that, I think we would hope that our elected officials would have a better standard than just, we don't want to be any dumber than the next town over.
Karen, the Bengals aren't the only NFL team in Ohio, of course. The Cleveland Browns are up north and they have a new stadium in the works, too, don't they?
Yeah, and, as you talk about bad deals, as a Cleveland Browns fan, I'm going to try to restrain myself from making comments about the team itself. But yeah, there's a potential new stadium in the works in Cleveland. The Haslams, Jimmy and Dee Haslam, the owner, the owners of the Browns, as well as the owners of the Columbus Crew, have said they want to relocate to the Cleveland suburb of Brook Park and build a new domed stadium for about $2.4 billion. And they're hoping that the state can be relied upon to pick up some of that cost. Around $600 million of it, I think, is what they're hoping for from state and local government. So I don't know that necessarily the deal is completely contingent on getting all of that funding, but they're certainly counting on state and local governments to help them pay for some of this. They claim it's an economic engine, that it'll generate jobs, it'll generate all sorts of activity. And so I think that that's the argument that they're hinging their whole request on.
And we'll get into that later. We're spending the hour today talking about stadium negotiations between Hamilton County and the Bengals. If you have questions or comments, and we know some of you do, give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. So, Chris, what do we know about where these talks between the county and the Bengals stand? A whole bunch of texts and emails became public record last month. What kind of picture did they paint?
Yeah, as of early January, the talks were not going well. Basically, to try to, you know, we wrote a long cover story breaking this news last month. But to really sum it up, the Bengals accused the county of being in default on the current lease. And the county shortly thereafter accused the Bengals of being in default. And we could go into the reasons if you want. But, you know, basically relations were not real good. You know, a lot of accusations from the Bengals that the county is basically dragging its feet on negotiating. And the county's position long has been, well, we want a more diversified streams of funding. Recently, they put a framework out saying, this word was notable, equitable contributions by the NFL, the Bengals, the county, and the state of Ohio.
We did get an email from Brian. Brian wrote, "No public money of any kind for the Bengals. They fooled us once, and they've been terrible on the field ever since." I will say they went to the Super Bowl, and was it 2022? So 2023, okay. They can play their games on 3rd Street for all I care, so... That's from Brian, and we know a lot of people out there have strong feelings about this. I will say we invited representatives from the county and the team to be part of this conversation. They declined, but both the county and the team released statements last month after those texts and emails became public. Hamilton County's statement, again, this is older, so it has an old date referenced in it, said the team and county are continuing discussions on the nature of a new lease and a comprehensive renovation strategy for Paycor Stadium. While we don't always agree on everything, we are both committed to moving expeditiously in 2025 towards a sustainable financial solution that prioritizes the needs of the community and the team. And then the statement notes, county commissioners will discuss the framework detailing the county's position at our next staff meeting on Tuesday, January 22nd, 21st. So that obviously happened last month. The Bengals' statement was, the Bengals and Hamilton County have been working together for 30 years. Over those decades, there will naturally be areas where the parties agree and areas where the parties disagree. The Bengals' goals for many years has been to extend the lease and to keep the stadium competitive in the NFL. We believe that this is an area of agreement among the parties, and the team will continue to work to achieve these goals. So we also got an email from Nicholas. Nicholas writes, why are the taxpayers being asked to fund a new stadium? Why can't the wealthy owners or shareholders pick up the tab? And that is certainly something that we, I think, journalists have heard over the years. Chris, do we know what that tab's going to be? Do we know about what kind of renovations we're talking about, how much they'll cost? The county released a big plan, but the Bengals never exactly signed off on that, did they?
Yeah, not only that, but the county commissioners themselves didn't sign off on it. Just to back up for listeners, there were basically two different numbers thrown out there over the last few years. Back in the early part of this decade, there was an assessment of the facility itself. What are the bare bones needs that need to be repaired? And we're talking the HVAC systems, the escalators, just the basic things that people use when they're over there. That number was just a little bit under $500 million to do that stuff. Earlier this year, or maybe it was late last year, it's all running together to me, but it was relatively recent. The county unveiled a $1.25 billion plan to overhaul the kind of what we would maybe call the campus, which would also include the practice field to the west. They would move the team's offices out of the stadium and build them a new practice facility plus administrative offices and whatnot out of the stadium, with the idea being that maybe they could get more use out of the stadium other than the NFL games and the Cincinnati Music Festival, which are kind of the two most consistent things over there. And really, when you add that up, we're talking a little bit, you know, if we're generous, 15 days a year when the stadium is really being used at its max. So when that $1.25 billion proposal was unveiled, you know, you didn't really have any of the county commissioners endorsing it, even though they had thought that they had agreed with the Bengals to kind of, you know, partner on, you know, some kind of vision for what that would look like. So it's a very kind of bizarre situation where, you know, you have this very expensive plan and neither the team nor the county has really said, yeah, this is what we should do.
We got to add too, the question was raised about why not having shareholders pay for some of these costs. Well, these teams are privately owned and privately held. I mean, the only NFL team that has shareholders is the Green Bay Packers. The only Major League Baseball team that has shareholders and is publicly traded are the Atlanta Braves. So these are privately owned entities. And so there really aren't any shareholders to split the costs among, in a sense. It's really on the potentially on the owners to make these kind of investments.
Right.
Unless the government wants, unless the state or city or somebody else wants to put in money as well.
Piggybacking off of that, one of the important things that the NFL has done in recent years is allowed private equity to come in and own portions of teams, which is a potential source of cash for these types of renovations. And one, I think that, you know, some of the public's becoming vaguely aware of that as well. So
we did get
another.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just want to mention we got another email saying Los Angeles SoFi Stadium was privately funded and arguably one of the best in the country. I agree on no more public funding for the Bengals. And I was going to ask you, Neil, I mean, can the owners pay for these? Can they raise money through private equity? What are the trends? What are the possibilities?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, right? I mean, one of the things in Los Angeles is that Los Angeles obviously is an enormous market, right? So they're able to probably have a lot more concerts there and a lot more events there, and bring in more money to pay back at least part of the, I think it was like $5-6 billion that Stan Kroenke spent on that. The short answer obviously is team owners could spend the money, but then, you know, they obviously will make more money if they're spending someone else's money, right? You know, if you ask someone else for $1 billion, that's $1 billion that you don't have to spend. The more interesting question is whether these stadiums are really worthwhile. You know, the argument is always that, you know, a new stadium or a renovated stadium is a cash cow and team owners need them in order to keep their revenues up. But if you're saying, well, the amount of new money we would get in isn't enough to pay for what it would cost to redo the place, then what you're really saying is that the renovation or the new stadium or whatever it is a money loser. And that's not where you're getting the money from. What you're really looking for is the public check, right? And like I like to say, you know, if you're a sports team owner and you go to the county or the state legislature and you say, hi, I would like $500 million, please, you know, get the door closed politely in your face. Whereas if you go and say, I would like $500 million, please, so that I can renovate my stadium, suddenly there's a conversation.
We got an email from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, about the time the original lease with the Bengals was negotiated, the Bengals were worth about $507 million. That's in the early 2000s. They're now worth, per Forbes, $4.1 billion with a B as of August of 2024. The most recent sale of an NFL franchise was over $6 billion. Everyone seems to make money with our stadium, the Brown family, Bengals sports franchise, the NFL and its partners, TV networks, radio, streaming services, and other media. The only ones who don't
profit are the taxpayers who own it. It's time for that to change. Give the Bengals and the NFL whatever they want as long as they pay for it, and the lease provides a revenue stream to cover all our costs plus a profit and an escalator clause for inflation. What has been described for years as, quote, the worst stadium deal in the country, end quote, needs to be brought to a level playing field with all participants benefiting financially. The Bengals slash NFL style of the Stockholm Syndrome seems to be shed by the citizens of the area, needs to be shed, rather, by the citizens of the area, especially those who are blindly committed to having an NFL franchise who can't seem to see the one-sided nature of the current agreement. So strong opinion there from Steve. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will continue our conversation. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the ongoing stadium negotiations between Hamilton County and the Cincinnati Bengals. My guests are co-author of the book, Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit, Neil DeMoss, Ohio Public Media State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterich. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Karen, before the break, Chris was saying we're not really clear on exactly what this renovation, what these upgrades will be. But one thing that is clear is that local governments want the state to help fund the new stadium for the Browns and upgrades for the Bengals. Explain what Governor Mike DeWine has included in his budget proposal to help with that.
Well, I think one of the things that keeps being brought up here, too, that's important is where does the money go? I mean, let's say you build this development that includes the stadium, it raises money. Where does all that money go? Does that money go back into the pocket of the owner? Does it go back to the state? Does it go back to local governments? Where does it go? And how much can be expected? These are all, I think, important things that are being considered when you start talking about stadium projects in general and how long they last and how much they actually bring in. But there, I think Governor Mike DeWine, this is his last budget, and I think he may be getting a little bit tired of some of the requests for stadium money. And so he's proposed coming up with a fund that would be used to put money toward these stadium projects. And he would use the gambling tax money, the tax on proprietors of gambling operations, to do that. And this is a tax that started when sports gambling became illegal in Ohio at 10%. It went up to 20% in the last budget. He's proposing putting it up to 40%. And then this would allow that money to be used for, he said, for stadium projects, for other things that are related to sports, even for youth sports. But he said that this would be an opportunity for the funding for those sorts of projects to come from that sports gambling tax rather than from the state's general revenue fund. And because he wants the state's general revenue fund to be focused on things like education and other priorities that he thinks are more important than putting it toward sports facilities.
You mentioned education, and Karen, as I understand it, currently 98% of the revenue from that sports gambling tax goes to education, and about 2%, I guess, goes to problem gambling. How does Ohio's sports betting tax rate compare to other states? Where are we going from 20% to 40% put us? Do you have a feel for that?
Well, at 20%, we're tied for sixth nationwide. And then we have Pennsylvania and Vermont who are ahead of us. Most states are around, I think, under 10% maybe. But this would certainly, taking us to 40% would certainly bring us above, it looks like, any other state in terms of the tax that would be involved with sports gambling. I think DeWine has been pretty clear on his views on sports gambling. He doesn't like it. He's really been very suspicious and concerned about some of the ways, especially, that sports gambling entities have gone after younger gamblers. He said that they've been really aggressive. And so I think this is part of why he's looking at that. And of course, when you look at the new sports stadiums and the additions that they're adding, I mean, I'm primarily familiar with the Cleveland area because that's where I'm a fan of the Browns and the Guardians, but they've added these sections that are specifically sponsored by the sports gambling. I think the Guardians, it's Fanatics, you know. I think that that's maybe why DeWine may be looking at this, but he's also looking at the reality that the state has limited resources. And when you have limited resources, you have to decide what the priority is. And for DeWine, the priorities have always been different than putting money toward sports facilities.
Yeah. And we saw some research that New York's sports gambling tax is maybe 50%. So I think New York would still be ahead of us if we went up to 40, but it would certainly be high. Did you want to add something, Chris?
Yeah, it's interesting. We've heard all of the listeners say, no more public money, no more public money. And what DeWine's proposed here is kind of an elegant solution, because if you don't gamble, you don't have to pay this tax. And you're not paying the tax anyway. The entities that sponsor these the sites, they're the ones paying it. It's not like your bet is taxed or your winnings. Your winnings are taxed, but that's a part of the income tax. And, you know, I think that one of the things that has really stuck in the craw of Hamilton County over the years is that the county used the sales tax, which is a general tax on everybody who buys something in this county, to pay for these buildings. In a lot of other states, you see hotel taxes being used. Of course, ours is very high already, so it's kind of precluded as a potential revenue source. But the fact that the county is using a source of money that could be used for its general services has really stuck in the craw of people over the years.
Yeah, I remember in the early days after the sales tax was passed, there were all kinds of estimates that the stadium would be paid off early, the tax could be lowered, and then life happened. So we have Michelle. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Karen.
I was just going to say that you are correct. New York is definitely ahead of us at about 51% tax rate. And it looks like New Hampshire and Rhode Island are also in that area there. But certainly 40%, if it's raised to 40%, that brings Ohio up into the higher levels of how much they're charging sports gambling proprietors in terms of taxes.
Okay.
Yeah. And just to add really quickly, like, that sort of gets into the issue of why it can sometimes be dangerous to say, well, you know, we're not the one, you're not paying for this unless you're gambling, right? Or sometimes there'll be taxes around a stadium of sales taxes there. They'll say, if you're not going to the game, that you're not paying for it. But it's still money that the state is collecting and then can't collect for something else, right? I remember back in Baltimore, back in the 90s, when they built new stadiums for the Orioles and the Ravens, they paid for it with lottery money. And everybody said, oh, it's great. You know, it's new lotteries, sports lotteries. It has nothing, you know, it won't be any new taxes. It doesn't come out of your pocket. And then somebody came back and said, that worked well. Why don't we do a lottery to raise money for education? And we're told, no, sorry, you've tapped out the market. We can't sell any more lottery tickets. Mm-hmm. And it's the same sort of thing here, right? If you raise, you know, it might be a good idea to raise the gambling tax to 40%. You know, I don't have inside information on that. But if it is, then you have to think, what's the best way to spend that money, right? And if you're spending it on stadiums, then you can never, ever spend it on something else.
Sure, like education, which is what most of the tax revenue pays for now. We do have a caller on the line. Hey, Michelle, thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Well, I think another avenue stream would be to have all the players, and not just the Bengals, but soccer and baseball, they have to live in the city limits. They have to pay city taxes, Hamilton County taxes, just like those of us who are supporting the stadium that have never been in it.
Okay. So you're saying if they're going to get the benefit of the taxpayers helping to fund it, then live in the city. Well, thank you for that comment. We appreciate it. Thanks, Michelle. We also have an email from Barbara. Barbara says, where can I find resources on who this really benefits? The narrative that it helps our economy is shady. Sure, construction workers make money, but who besides the owners and vendors make money? And of course, the poor disproportionately pay more on the tax. Is there a resource about that aspect as well? Neil, have you looked into that in terms of what the economic impact really is of these facilities, if any?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not an economist, but I do hang out with economists, which is more fun than it sounds. you know, there are a whole bunch of them, you know, who hang out on Twitter, J.C. Bradbury, Victor Matheson, who often comment on these things. But, you know, also on my Field Scheme site, I try to provide links to, you know, all the different studies that have shown just over the years that, you know, as you know, a lot of the callers and writers are saying that the you know, the beneficiaries of these are overwhelmingly the team owners, right? You know, we're just talking about how much the value of the Bengals has gone up over the years. And a lot of that is because they got, you know, the benefits of a new stadium without having to pay very much for one. Whereas, you know, the costs invariably are, you know, on the general public. You know, it's a little hard to put a hard number on things because it's hard to say how much would we have been spending on schools if we hadn't done this. But, you know, Hamilton County would still have that hospital that it sold to pay for Bengals upgrades, right? If not for that deal. So, yeah, I mean, there's study after study, and every economist in the country is going to tell you that, you know, pretty much the worst possible way to spend public money is to put it into a football stadium. It's only going to be used 10, 12 times a year.
The economic research is pretty universal, and unless the teams pay for the economic research, then I think the results are a little different. The problem is that the, you know, elected officials don't want to be the ones to have lost one of these teams. And I think
that's always the threat, right? I mean,
right.
Before the sales tax was passed in 96, the Bengals made trips to other markets. There was concern that they would move the team.
Yeah. And the business leadership here as well, even though when this deal was struck, it was all Republican controlled and now we're all Democratic controlled. But the business leadership also, I don't think, wants to lose the team. And we haven't really gotten to that point yet. I'm not sure if we will soon or not, where there's, you know, the gamesmanship and the brinksmanship. I think that the reason they don't want to lose the team, you know, I think that by now they probably accept that there's the economic impact is pretty negligible. But in terms of kind of a soft view of this, in terms of, okay, the Bengals are on national television, it puts Cincinnati on a map in a way that, you know, it would be hard to do if we didn't have an NFL team. And I think
so
that is the
marketing,
the intangible benefit there. And I'm sure somebody would try to measure that. You know, that's what they latch onto.
I was about to say, people have measured that, right? They've done studies of when you get a new team or you get a new stadium, you know, what happens to your, you know, local per capita income, or, you know, any of a different number of economic indicators, you know, that you should see increase, right? If, you know, more people are coming to your city or investing in your city because, you know, you're on TV every week, and it's just not there. You know, I mean, the impact is as close to zero or even negative as you can possibly get. And it's just study after study, to the point where I've heard economists complain that they can't even get their studies approved anymore because they go and, you know, ask to do a study of something and they're told, man, that's been looked at to death. Go look at something else.
And it's funny, though, that DeWine actually did mention the idea of sports and professional sports being something that is used to sell Ohio to companies that are outside the state that they're trying to bring here. But yet he set up this fund specifically to target these projects rather than putting state money toward it. But he said that, you know, we talk about our state parks, we talk about our entertainment options, we talk about professional sports when we try to sell the state. But yeah, there really weren't any numbers from the governor on how much of a value these stadiums and the sports teams really bring, other than they are something that is certainly used as a selling point when you're trying to lure people and businesses here.
Karen, has there been much reaction from state lawmakers to this proposal that the governor's made about raising the sports gambling tax to help pay for this stuff?
Well, budget hearings have just started, so only this week, as a matter of fact, because the budget was introduced on Monday. But at the first House Finance Committee hearing, my State House News Bureau colleagues, Joe Ingles and Sarah Donaldson, went and spoke to House Finance Committee Chair Brian Stewart, who said that this is kind of a surprise to him, I guess, because we haven't even finished two football seasons yet, and we're already talking about what he said was quadrupling the tax, which is correct because it started out as 10% and this would be 40%. And even the ranking member, Democratic Representative Bride Rose Sweeney from the Cleveland area said she wants to look at the tax. There needs to be more due diligence done here. So I think there's some skepticism on the part of lawmakers because this would be a significant tax increase. Again, it really is very targeted. But it's something that especially Republicans in this legislature have not wanted to do in terms of increasing taxes. And so this is going to, I think, require some selling on the part of the governor to make it happen.
We got some more emails. Charlene emails, "We need to learn from our past experience with Paycor Stadium. If Cincinnati and Hamilton County decide to tax citizens for a new arena, they should build into the deal a way to pay back the citizens once they have tenants for the new arena, such as a new WNBA team or minor league hockey team, which will be necessary to make the arena a successful revenue-generating venue." So Charlene's looking ahead to the proposal to build a new arena. And Ty emails, "Perhaps if there was a law that prohibited county officials from working for these professional sports organizations after they are out of elected office, the deals negotiated may be more beneficial to the public. Bob Bettinghouse was a commissioner that negotiated the stadium deal and then goes to work for the team. It gives the appearance of a conflict." And Bob Bettinghouse was a Hamilton County commissioner at the time the sales tax was on the ballot, at the time the lease was being negotiated, and then he did work for the Bengals for a while. He doesn't any longer, as I understand it.
Do you think this would pass if it went to the ballot, Lucy, based on the input that we have today?
We have some strong feelings that we're hearing from the people, that's for sure. Go ahead, Chris.
On the governor's proposal, one of the listeners talked about the arena, and if the state were to step in and pay for part of this, that could actually help the arena. I've got a column coming out today that talks a little bit about this, but that could potentially help the arena discussion because, A, the tax itself could be a source for Cincinnati's future new arena, but it also might open up some of the funding in the current sales tax to deal with that question as well. So,
I don't know if things have changed a lot, but I know that before Nationwide Arena was built in Columbus for the Blue Jackets, the question was brought to voters 5 times to find out if they wanted to pay for a stadium, and it was rejected 5 times. So I think, you know, things are a little bit different now. Of course, we do have the Blue Jackets, and there was funding from the county involved in that. But voters have been, I think, skeptical of these projects over the years. And so certainly, I mean, in Cleveland, you saw a sales tax or a sin tax pass right before the Browns left. I think, though, voters are a little bit cautious when they start looking at some of these things now.
Even in Kansas City, which has actual World Series and Super Bowl championships to
talk
about.
That was a mean way to say it, Chris.
Unlike this region, said no to an extension of their sales tax to pay for upgrades to those two stadiums in Kansas City.
Well, they probably feel like they don't need it. The teams are winning anyway, right?
I guess. I don't know.
Neil, has it become more common for the state to contribute to projects like this in some way? And I know that here in Hamilton County, some of the commissioners have said, hey, we hope the NFL kicks in on this deal, too. Has that become more common practice for state governments for professional leagues to help with some of the funding for these stadium upgrades and new projects?
I think we've seen team owners try to go to wherever they can for public money, right? Or for money that isn't going to come out of their pockets, right? So if it's the city, if it's the county, if it's the state, if it's the league, that's not on them. So they're happy to take any of those. And that's really been the case since, I would say, the late 80s, early 90s, when you saw team owners start to sort of copy off of, car factories and computer chip plants and things like that, that would sort of play off cities against each other and say, we're gonna try and get as much public money as possible. What has happened is that the prices have gone up, right? And again, in the early 90s, you could build a stadium for $300 million maybe, and now you're talking, close to 10 times that, or certainly 6 times that. And so the public price tag has gone up significantly. And the other piece that, I think people who study this have seen is that the amount of sort of hidden costs have gone up, right? So you'll less see an upfront, okay, we're going to pay this amount, and more, we're going to put this amount in, and say like the Atlanta Falcons did, right? It was like, it's $200 million from the state, but then there's this waterfall fund of additional taxes down the road that will contribute another $500 million, or really it's $700 million. So that's the sort of one of the things to keep an eye out, is not just, and everybody's saying no public money, which is great as a position, but you want to look at not just public money up front, but public money down the road, and any public revenues that would come in down the road, right? Is the team actually going to pay rent? Is the team going to share naming rights? Any of that stuff? You really need to see all the pieces of the lease and of the agreement before you can evaluate how bad it is for the public.
Well, we're going to be back after another short break, and we're going to wrap up our conversation. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our discussion about stadium negotiations between Hamilton County and the Cincinnati Bengals. My guests are co-author of the book, Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit, Neil DeMoss, Ohio Public Media State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterich. If you have a question or comment, now's the time to call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Okay, Chris, I have kind of a devil's advocate question for you that I hope doesn't get our listeners, out with pitchforks for me outside the station. Ooh. But, you know, a lot of people complain about the Bengals stadium deal now, but voters did approve this sales tax increase in 1996 that made these developments possible, both the Bengals Stadium and Great American Ballpark on the riverfront. Should the Bengals be faulted for the deal they negotiated with the county?
Probably, I have no idea. I mean, I don't. When you're a professional sports team, you're going to want to negotiate the deal to get you the best money. I don't think anybody expects them to act anything but in their own self-interest. Although some would say, well, look at the Reds. They do a lot more in the community. They have a presence here that the Bengals don't seem to have. So, I guess you can even argue about that. But, to me, summing up the situation as it is, I think that the county is going to try to do a deal. And the question is, how good of a deal or bad of a deal will it be for the taxpayers this time? That's what the question is, as much as the research supports the county saying, no, we're not giving you any money this time, which is what a lot of our listeners have said this morning or this afternoon. But I think the political reality is that they're going to try to get something done. And the question will be, how good or bad will it be for the taxpayers? And how much do they roll back some of these provisions of the lease that are so problematic to the public?
Well, and the big thing is they don't, from the Bengals' perspective, they don't have to get a deal done, right, because of these extensions. Is that what makes that June date so important?
Right, right. We should come back to that. Yeah, the state budget is due June 30th, and that is the date the Bengals have to that's a deadline they must give the county notice that they're extending the lease. So I asked Commissioner Driehaus yesterday about that, and I said, well, are you really going to be able to do anything this year without really knowing all the way that the state will be or will not be doing this? And she said, no, I think that we'll have an idea going into, the summer of which way the winds are going to blow there. And of course, she was a former state lawmaker herself. So I'm not so sure about that. But, I think that we kind of said on the show the other day when we talked about this, that the most likely scenario was that the Bengals would extend the lease for 2 years at least as this kind of continues. I'm not sure my opinion has changed about that, but at least from the commissioner's point of view, they still hope to get something done by June 30th.
We have another caller on the line. Hey, Alan, thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Good morning, and thank you for having me on your show. It's more of a comment, and it was regarding the last financing for the stadium and the Bengals and all that. And what was interesting, at least to me, was that Hamilton County was saying, oh, it's going to do such wonderful things, we're going to be great, thank you so much for your help, we're going to pay you back on all this. And it may have happened with the city, too, but I'm referring to Hamilton County. And then all of a sudden, after it went through, it's kind of like, who are you and why are you talking to me? And all of a sudden, the payments were kind of unimportant and to be pushed aside. And eventually, hopefully, it's all been taken care of. But that made me skeptical about, gee, what a great deal we're going to get through city and county government, probably more county. That's it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Neil, thanks for that call, Alan. We appreciate it. Neil, we were talking about kind of the Bengals' interests here. Is it fair to assume that major league teams are just naturally going to try to get the best possible deals they can, every benefit they can from leases like this?
Oh, sure. The quickest way to get rich is to spend other people's money and, reap all the profits yourself.
That's what I'm doing wrong, Neil.
Same here, believe me. on the one hand, I don't blame them for trying to profiteer. On the other hand, they are obviously trying to get taxpayer dollars to benefit themselves and are being a little disingenuous about it, right? They're not just saying, well, you know, this is what all the other guys are doing and we're doing it ourselves. They try to claim, well, there's going to be an economic benefit and there's going to, you know, it's going to do all these things. So I think, you know, you have to expect your elected officials then to drive a hard bargain, right? And to say, okay, we understand that you can threaten to leave. We don't want you to leave. We understand you're going to threaten to leave even if you don't want to leave, right? Because that's how leverage works. But, you know, we're not just going to give away the store. So how can we, you know, find something that at least keeps the public costs down to a dull roar and not as bad as this horrible deal that we signed last time? So I think that's what, you know, you need both people in Hamilton County and in the state to be trying to negotiate. And the concern is that if you say, okay, we're creating this huge slush fund of money that will then get used for stadiums before you get the commitment from the Bengals owners and the Browns owners and everybody else about what you're going to get in return, then, you know, you risk, you know, spending money before you know what you're getting back. And that's always dangerous.
Karen, you mentioned that some lawmakers have expressed some skepticism about this proposal to double the tax on sports gambling. Do you hear much from lawmakers, state lawmakers, opposing other benefits for major league teams? And I'm thinking about the end of last legislative session, the General Assembly approved this amendment in one of these Christmas tree bills that allowed the Bengals to apply for sales tax exemptions on materials and equipment they purchased for improvements and upgrades to Paycor Stadium. And that was something that kind of took the county by surprise, but that just kind of seemed to sort of sail through the last session.
Well, it did sail through the last session in the sense that it was attached to that Christmas tree bill. So you did see a lot of things that kind of went through at the very end of our lame duck session that seemed like they hadn't had a lot of discussion. But these were things that in some cases had been discussed months or even a year ago, but then were added on at the very end just to get them through before the 2-year session ended. And then these bills all expired and had to start all over again. I think there's a little bit of caution on how to treat these professional sports teams. Because like I mentioned earlier in the show, Governor Mike DeWine has even said that when the state goes out and tries to bring in companies and talks about the good things that are happening in Ohio, they talk about state parks, they talk about entertainment options, they talk about sports and professional sports. Ohio is unique in that we have as many professional sports options as we do. And so I think that there's caution raised on how to make sure that there is this option given to ensure that these professional sports franchises stay here, but you don't want to give them so much that they end up taking everything that they can, which is obviously what the owners of these teams want to do. They want to get the best deals that they can, as you've heard throughout the show. I think one of the things too, in this particular budget, DeWine has been saying over and over, it was going to be a leaner budget. The one-time federal funds that we had seen over the last couple of years with COVID and some of these other grants and federal monies were going to expire. And so this was going to be a leaner budget. So that's, I think, part of the caution that he's thrown up in terms of making sure that people understand the expectations of what this budget is going to bring. I think that this fund that he's proposed with this 40% gambling tax is part of the idea of pushing this away from the general revenue fund and finding another way to continue to satisfy the needs of sports team owners, but also making sure that the priorities of the state are taken care of.
This is kind of a big change for the state, or at least a notable change. I was looking up the percentages of funding the other day for folks in Minnesota and Wisconsin and New York, and, you know, just kind of goes on and on. The states there have traditionally taken a bigger role than Ohio has. I'm not saying that Ohio has contributed nothing to these stadiums, but the county to this day is still, you know, kind of perturbed that the state did not kick in more for the first time on this. And you see other states, for example, in Wisconsin, the Milwaukee Brewers, their stadium was originally built with a sales tax increase that spanned all of the counties in the metro area, which is another thing we should probably talk about. Why is one county of our, you know, seven main ones bearing the brunt here? But, you know, they paid for it, and then the tax expired, and the Brewers came back and said, hey, look, we need a ton of renovations here. And rather than the counties once again you know, kicking in for that money, the state of Wisconsin basically took on the public share, more or less. And so you see that in other states as well. And this would be a little bit of a change, given that DeWine at one point during this press conference said, well, we could pay for up to 40%. And then he kind of checked himself and went and said, well, it doesn't have to be that much. But that was when I heard him say 40% of the cost, I was like, oh, my gosh, that's a really significant amount there.
Yeah.
Compared to what they have paid.
Neil, Hamilton County announced that it's hiring a stadium expert from New York to be part of its negotiating team. Back in the late 90s, I was covering this, and I remember the county hired experts from Chicago to help, and you can see kind of how it turned out based on people's reaction. Neil, does some of this amount to who lawyers up most effectively?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues that we've seen, especially in some of the really terrible leases like St. Louis, is that you have the teams having, you know, people who are pros in the sports business and kind of know where all the money is hidden, whereas cities or counties tend to, you know, have whoever the lawyer is on their staff just go and work out the lease. So having somebody who's an expert in the industry definitely can help. Of course, if this is someone who has previously negotiated for the other side, you want to make sure that they're actually doing everything they can for you and, you know, don't sort of have one foot in the world of the sports industry at the same time. So it's potentially helpful. I, you know, think that depends on, you know, how good they are and how they're used. But, again, if they are doing their job right and are actually going to be negotiating hard for your side and saying, oh, hey, we just noticed, what about this thing that you're not going to be paying for, then that could potentially easily pay for itself.
Karen, what's next for the governor's proposal to increase taxes on sports betting? Do you think the county will know before June 30th whether that's a go or not?
Well, yeah, I mean, right now the budget is in the House, and it's expected to get through the House by April, and then it goes over to the Senate. The Senate will make its changes. And I should say that the House will make probably some significant changes, as they usually do to the governor's budget. And the Senate will make its changes. So the whole process takes a while, but I think that there will be signs along the way what the expectations can be.
And Neil, Chris said earlier that he would not be surprised if the Bengals start that clock and get a 2-year extension for this lease. You've watched negotiations like this play out all over the country. Any predictions on this? What should we be watching for?
I wouldn't be surprised if they extend it as well, just because it seems like they probably figure they can get a better deal if they have a little more time, right? We just saw today the Los Angeles Angels, after, you know, having a stadium plan that they had proposed, fall short because of all sorts of shenanigans with their mayor, they just renewed their lease for another 3 years. Leases can always be extended, and, you know, it's all about whether the team owner thinks that they can, you know, do better by playing gamesmanship and, you know, brinksmanship, or saying, okay, fine, we'll give you another year and you can, you know, try and figure something out down the road.
Would that be bad news for the county, Chris? I'm asking you that with only about 15 seconds to answer it.
Bad news to extend it. That's not what they want. They want a new lease.
And they want one that's a long-term, right?
They want a long-term one, and they want different provisions in it.
Okay.
But we don't know precisely what those are yet.
Okay. Well, this has been fascinating. I've been talking with co-author of the book, Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit, Neil DeMoss, Ohio Public Media, State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler, and Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterich. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.